Hello, everyone, and welcome to Homicide Hot Dish. I'm Brittany.
And I'm Deanna.
And now on to the homicide. These are the murders of Lucinda Schaefer, Andrea Hall, Jackie Gilliam, Leah Lamp, and Shirley Ledford. Lawrence Bittaker was born on September 27, 1940, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He was adopted when he was around 2 years old, and his adoptive family moved around quite a bit, as his dad was working in aircraft factories, which required them to move around quite often. They moved from Pennsylvania to a few other states until finally arriving in California. According to Murderpedia, Bittaker dropped out of high school in 1957 at the age of 17, and he had several run-ins with the law. He was in prison until he was 19, then just days after being released, he was arrested again, and I believe it was for stealing a vehicle. He was then sentenced to 18 months in an Oklahoma federal reformatory, where he was actually transferred to a Missouri medical center because of his behavior. After serving 6 months, he was released. Then, in December of 1960, at age 20, he was arrested for robbery and sentenced to 1 to 15 years in state prison in California. While here, he had a psychiatric evaluation that determined that he was paranoid and borderline psychotic and having little control over his impulses. Yet again, in 1963, at the age of 23, he was released. Then, just 2 months later, he was thrown back into prison. This time it was for violating his parole and because of a suspected robbery. While in prison, he was again given a psychiatric evaluation, and again he was found to be borderline psychotic. Yet, in 1966, he was released. Then, in July of 1967, about 4 years after his last arrest, he was arrested again.
Shocking.
Right? Definitely didn't see that coming. He was convicted of theft and leaving the scene of a hit and run. He was sentenced to 5 years, but was released in April of 1970 after serving about only 3 years. And as usual, after being released, he went back to his normal ways. In March of 1971, at age 31, and not quite a year after being released, he was picked up for a burglary and for violating his parole. He was sentenced to between 6 months and 15 years, and he ended up serving 3 years. He was obviously again released and continued with his crimes. However, he seemed to be more aggressive now. In 1974, at age 34, he was arrested for stabbing an employee of a Hollywood convenience store in the parking lot. He had stolen a steak from the store, and the employee followed him out of the store to try to stop him when Bittaker stabbed the employee. According to Wicked Attraction, Bittaker stabbed the man just under his heart, and he came less than an inch from death. Bittaker was convicted of attempted murder. He was placed in the California Men's Colony in San Luis Obispo. He was given yet another psychiatric evaluation here, which actually rejected the psychotic finding from his previous evaluations. This time, it was found that he was actually a classic example of a sociopath. According to Murderpedia, another psychiatrist actually called him a sophisticated psychopath. According to Wicked Attraction, psychiatrist Dr. Ronald Markman says, quote, Lawrence Bittaker demonstrated the clear-cut characteristics of a sociopath or a psychopath, end quote. Despite these warnings, in November of 1978, he was yet again released. But before his release, he befriended a fellow inmate named Roy Norris. Roy Norris was born on February 5, 1948, in Greeley, Colorado. He was similar to Bittaker in that he dropped out of school at the age of 17, and he had been in and out of jail as well. After dropping out of school, Norris decided to join the Navy. He was mostly stationed in San Diego and served 4 months in Vietnam. In 1969, he was arrested in San Diego for attempted rape. 3 months later, while out on bail and before his trial, he was arrested again, this time for trying to attack a woman in her home. After this, he was discharged from the Navy. Then, according to Murderpedia, in May of 1970, he attacked a female student on the San Diego State University campus. He jumped her from behind, hit her on the head with a rock, and then actually slammed her head on the concrete multiple times. The woman ended up surviving, and he was charged with assault with a deadly weapon. He spent 5 years at a state hospital as a sex offender and was then released. 3 months after his release, he attacked another woman. This time, it was a 27-year-old woman that he had raped. He was then sent to the California Men's Colony in San Luis Obispo, which, as I said earlier, is where he met Lawrence Bittaker. Bittaker was 38 years old when they met, and Norris was 30. As their friendship grew, they began talking about how they both had one thing in common, that they both wanted to rape and torture teenage girls. They began plotting to make this a reality once they were out of prison. Their idea included abducting girls between the ages of 13 and 19.
Okay, so why go after girls so young? I mean, Norris seemed to go after women in their 20s before, and he raped a 27-year-old woman. So why target young girls?
So, according to prosecutor Stephen Kay, he says that he thinks the reason for this is because they were actually afraid of women and things in their past leading them to sort of be frightened of women, so they decided to just go after young teenage girls instead. Most likely, I would think anyway, because these young girls wouldn't be able to fight them off. Deanna, read his quote from Wicked Attraction.
He says, quote, "They were going to come down to the South Bay area in Los Angeles and pick up teenage girls and torture them and murder them," end quote.
Now, as I mentioned, Bittaker was released from the California Men's Colony in November of 1978. Norris was then released 2 months later in January of 1979. The next month, February 1979, Bittaker contacted Norris and the two met up to discuss their sick plans. First off, they needed a vehicle. So they bought a silver 1977 GMC cargo van, which when I think of the term creeper van, this van is literally the definition. It's got like the big sliding door, which is perfect for their plan of quickly kidnapping their victims and throwing them in the van. Bittaker actually nicknames the van. He comes up with the nickname Murder Mac. According to Wicked Attraction, the reasoning for the name is because Bittaker may have sort of looked up to the Hillside Stranglers, which was a duo who murdered in LA between 1977 and 1978, and they also named their killing machine. And Bittaker chose the name Murder Mac because he said the van reminded him of a Mack truck. Now that they had a vehicle, it was time to start looking for victims. Their plan was to drive along California's Pacific Coast Highway in search of their victims. According to Wicked Attraction, they drove up and down the highway for 3 months scoping out potential victims. According to Murderpedia, they would go to beaches and talk to girls. They acted like they were fun and would joke around with the girls and they'd take pictures of them. And before they kidnapped any of the victims, their next move is to find a remote location where they can rape and torture these girls. They end up finding an area in the San Gabriel Mountains. The area actually had a fence around it that Bittaker put his own lock on, so they basically dubbed it their spot. According to Wicked Attraction, psychiatrist Dr. Ronald Markman says, quote, "All these plans were made to minimize their ability to get caught," end quote. The men then installed a bed in the back of their van. Underneath the bed, they placed a cooler, spare clothes, and a toolbox filled with tools. They began hunting along the 20-mile stretch of coast from Redondo Beach to Santa Monica. And on June 24, 1979, they found their first target. They spotted 16-year-old Lucinda Schaefer, who went by Cindy. According to Wicked Attraction, Cindy had attended St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church near Redondo Beach, and her grandmother dropped her off for a senior high youth fellowship meeting that day. Afterwards, Cindy started walking home. According to legal documents on case law, Cindy was walking along a residential street when the two men approach her in their van. They ask her if she'd like a ride, but she turns them down and just keeps walking. Bittaker then acted like he was driving off, but he parked the van a little ways down the street, and Norris then got out and pretended that he was either repairing the van or looking at something in the side door of the van. When Cindy walked by, Norris grabbed her and forced her into the van. With Bittaker driving, Norris duct taped her mouth and bound her arms and legs. Bittaker then drove them to their secret spot in the mountains, and here Norris raped her while Bittaker acted as a lookout. Then Bittaker took his turn in raping her. And after he was done, Norris raped her a second time. Cindy knew she was in trouble. She asked Norris if they were going to kill her, but he assured her that they weren't going to. According to Wicked Attraction, she then asked him, if they're going to kill her, will they at least let her pray first? They wouldn't even give her that. Bittaker grabbed Cindy and held her while Norris tried to strangle her. Bittaker then also tried strangling her, but he couldn't seem to squeeze tightly enough to kill her. So he turns to his toolbox. He grabbed a wire clothes hanger and opened it up, looped it around her neck, then grabbed a vice grips pliers and turned the head of the hanger until it tightened just enough to kill her. They wrapped her body in a shower curtain and dumped her in a nearby canyon. When Cindy doesn't arrive home, her grandmother calls the police, but the case goes nowhere as they have no evidence or witnesses or anything to go off of. Then, about 2 weeks after they killed Cindy, they strike again. They drive along the Pacific Coast Highway like planned and end up in Manhattan Beach where they spot a hitchhiker. It's 18-year-old Andrea Hall. Now, this is how badly they want her as their next victim. According to legal documents on case law, they plan to offer her a ride, but before they get to her, another car actually ends up picking her up. So, they follow. The car drops her off in Redondo Beach, where she gets out and continues hitchhiking. Bittaker pulls up to Andrea and asks her if she needs a ride, while Norris is hiding in the back. And according to Wicked Attraction, Bittaker offers Andrea a drink. He tells her that there's a cooler in the back and to help herself. When she goes back to the cooler, though, Norris jumps out and attacks her. But Andrea was a strong girl and she fought back. Norris was actually afraid that she was going to beat him up, but unfortunately, he ends up gaining control over her and binds her arms and legs and tapes her mouth. Bittaker then drives to their secret spot in the mountains. Norris gets out and stands watch while Bittaker rapes her. Then it's Norris's turn with her, so Bittaker takes watch. After that, Bittaker decides to rape her again. So Norris goes back to stand watch. But Norris quickly comes back and says that he thinks he saw headlights coming up the road. So the men grab their victim and leave to a different location. When they get to their new location, Norris stands watch and Bittaker takes her up a small hill while keeping a walkie-talkie on him as a way to communicate with Norris in case something goes wrong. Now that Bittaker has Andrea all to himself, this time he decides that he wants some souvenirs. He pulls out a camera and begins taking pictures of Andrea. After nearly 2 hours of torture, he brings Andrea back to the van and shows Norris his souvenirs, which include pictures of Andrea naked in various poses. Bittaker then decides to continue torturing Andrea instead of just killing her right away. He decides he wants to rape her again. So he takes her to another hill up the road, and Norris ends up driving to a nearby store. I believe I read that he wanted to get some beer or something. So he keeps the walkie-talkie for communication with Bittaker. Now, when Norris comes back, Bittaker is alone. According to Wicked Attraction, Bittaker took more pictures of Andrea during her second round of torture, and as he's taking pictures of her, he tells her to give him reasons why he should spare her life. But the thing is, it won't matter what she says. Bittaker knows he's gonna kill her no matter what she tells him. This is just his way of showing that he has control over her. Bittaker then tells her that her reasons aren't good enough and he grabs an ice pick. He walks towards her and jams it in her ear through her brain, but it doesn't kill her instantly. He then grabs the pick and pushes it through her other ear and stepped on it until the handle broke. He then strangled her until she died. After that, he throws her body over a cliff not far from where he threw Cindy's body just a couple weeks earlier. Then, when Norris returns, Bittaker shares his pictures with him again. Norris says Andrea looked horrified in the pictures this time, which would make sense as Bittaker took those pictures while he told Andrea to basically plead for her life. Andrea's sister and brother-in-law end up reporting her missing. Now, two young women are missing. Girls, two young girls have gone missing, and only Bittaker and Norris know what happened to them. After murdering Andrea, they actually lay low for about 2 months. I'm not sure if this is just to make sure the cops don't catch on to them or to just make sure there's nothing tying them to these two missing girls before they continue on with their killing spree. Then on September 3rd, 1979, they go after their next victim, or in this case, victims.
Wait, so they killed more than one this time? It seems like with each murder, they kind of up their game, if you want to say, like they're escalating.
Yeah, so that is what happens. You'll continue to see that with each rape, torture, and murder, they try to, like, go bigger, I guess, than their previous murder. So this time, they spot two girls sitting on a bus stop bench near Hermosa Beach. The girls are 15-year-old Jackie Gilliam and 13-year-old Leah Lamp. They ask the girls if they need a ride, and the girls say yes, not knowing what happened to the two previous girls that also told them yes. According to Wicked Attraction, the girls are headed to the beach and Bittaker says he'll take them there. But when the girls realize he isn't driving in the direction of the beach, they start to panic. Bittaker tells them, hey, it's fine, I'm just looking for a place to smoke some marijuana. He ends up pulling up next to a tennis court. According to prosecutor Stephen Kay, Norris had a nylon sock full of BBs in their van. He used that to hit Leah as hard as he could in the head, knocking her out. Then he started attacking Jackie. Bittaker smashes her face as hard as he can, and just as they're doing this, they notice a nearby tennis player watching. Bittaker yells out, oh, she's just having a bad LSD trip. Then he quickly gets back in the driver's seat and drives off. They again head to their secret spot in the mountains. He drives past the sites of the two previous murders, and according to Murderpedia, they kept the girls alive for 2 days while they raped and tortured them. Now, neither Bittaker nor Norris has any interest really in raping Leah because I read that they felt she was overweight and they were more interested in Jackie. And Bittaker again wants souvenirs so he can relive the torture of these two poor girls. But this time he wants something different. He learns that Jackie is a virgin, so he pulls out an audio recorder and records her cries and pleas for help for him to stop during her rape. According to Wicked Attraction, Norris sat in the driver's seat of the van and held the audio recorder and recorded the events. Bittaker tells Jackie to pretend that she's enjoying it. Then Norris says something a little strange. He tells Jackie to pretend that she's a cousin of his that he's apparently, like, got a thing for.
Okay, wait. His cousin?
Yeah, his cousin. The two retie the girls and decide that they're going to sleep for the night and carry on with the torture in the morning. All four of them end up sleeping in the van that night. I don't know how much sleeping those poor girls did. In the morning, Bittaker turns his attention to 13-year-old Leah. According to legal documents on case law, he takes her up a hill and photographs her and then leaves her there. Now, I'm not sure if he, like, ties her up or something so that she's not going to try to run, but either way, he comes back alone. He then tells Norris to take some pictures of him and Jackie together. First, he wants pictures of them dressed, then he wants pictures of them naked, then he takes it a step further and wants pictures during her rape. After this, Bittaker goes and retrieves Leah and brings her back to the van. They then drive into town to get some food and supplies. Then they come back to their secret spot and take more naked photos of Jackie. And at this point, Bittaker begins torturing Jackie. Norris makes a suggestion that they should just quickly kill her because she had been so helpful. I'm not sure what he meant by helpful, but it seems that he's kind of starting to maybe feel bad for her and just wants Bittaker to kind of kill her quickly instead of torturing her and prolonging her death. However, Bittaker doesn't really seem to care what Norris thinks, and he takes her out of the van and stabs an ice pick through her ear and into her brain, as he had done before. He then strangles her to death. After that, he turns his attention to Leah. According to legal documents on case file, he returns to the van where Leah had been forced to take tranquilizers because she wouldn't keep quiet. As Leah steps out of the van, he strikes her with a short-handled sledgehammer. He then chokes her while Norris strikes her with that sledgehammer 7 times until she dies. The men then take the two bodies, Jackie's with the ice pick still in her head, and throw them over a cliff. Both girls are reported missing, but police, again, like every other time, have very little to go on. Now remember, all these girls are teenagers, and many times back then, and I guess as today as well, when teens go missing, it's kind of first assumed that they're just runaways. You know, like, sick of their parents, they just want to be adults, do what they want, so they run away. Now, on September 27th, 1979, the men end up making a mistake. They attempt to abduct a woman, but it doesn't go as planned. Now, I do believe they actually did get her in their van and they did rape her, but she got away after that. I didn't find if they took her to the secret spot or if they just raped her right away when they got her in the van, but either way, she got away. Then, 3 days later, they make another mistake. On September 30th, they see 20-year-old Jan Malin. According to legal documents on case law, Jan parked her car in an apartment garage and then went back to the garage entrance to close the door. But Bittaker ended up approaching her and spraying her with mace. He then attempts to drag her into their van. She started screaming, and that got people's attention. People ended up coming out of their houses that were nearby after hearing her screams for help. Norris then seems to kind of panic and he just drives away. Now, something I want to bring up is Jan is 20 years old. She's no longer a teenager. So I'm curious if they would have let her go then if they found out she's not a teenager.
Yeah, that's interesting. Maybe they'd still just kill her so there'd be no witness?
Right, possibly. Their next and final victim is 18-year-old Shirley Lynette Ledford. Now, according to some articles, she was hitchhiking home from her job, but according to others, like Wicked Attraction, on Halloween 1979, almost 2 months after they killed Jackie and Leah, they actually abandoned their usual hunting ground along the Pacific Coast Highway, and they drive along a residential street in the San Fernando Valley. I'm kind of thinking this is because it's Halloween, they know the teens are going to be out at parties, probably drunk and in a vulnerable state. Shirley had been at a Halloween party but had a fight with her boyfriend and no longer had a ride home, which was perfect for Norris and Bittaker. According to legal documents on case file, Bittaker drives off and then stops to grab a knife. He decides he doesn't want to waste any time driving to their secret spot this time, so Norris takes the driver's seat as Bittaker turns on his audio recorder, obviously wanting another souvenir. Norris begins driving with Bittaker and Shirley in the back. Bittaker rapes and tortures her as Norris drives around Los Angeles. According to Murderpedia, Bittaker ends up stabbing her multiple times and then tortures her with the pliers. Norris then gets his turn with Shirley. During the audio recording, you can hear her screaming and pleading with them. But while Bittaker beats her in the elbow with the sledgehammer, he decides it's time to kill her. He ends up strangling her with the coat hanger and pliers, which is his usual MO. Now, Norris and Bittaker get a little brave, or too confident, maybe you could say. Instead of dumping her body over a cliff like they have with the others, they actually leave her body on someone's front lawn.
Wait a minute. So they just dump her on a front lawn expecting not to be seen?
Yeah, and apparently it works. So I read that they decided to do this because they wanted to see the reaction of the community and to see it in the newspaper the next day. They've already killed 4 girls in like 4 months and haven't gotten caught yet, so they kind of start assuming that they're like immune to the police, I guess you could say. So, like I said, they decide to leave her body on a front lawn in Hermosa Beach. The next morning, a jogger spots her body with the coat hanger still around her neck. Now police have a body. Remember, they haven't found the other 4 victims yet, so police are on the hunt for a killer. Now, 3 weeks into their investigation, and they still haven't found anything. And Bittaker and Norris are still hunting for girls to abduct, rape, and murder. Police have no leads, and apparently no witnesses. And I mean, this was 1979. They didn't have, like, a doorbell camera or anything like we have nowadays, so they have nothing to follow. That is until Bittaker and Norris start boasting about what they did. Now, we do hear this quite often, that killers remain unknown until they start kind of pumping their chest out and bragging about their murders.
Which, thank God they do this, because otherwise they might not get caught.
Exactly. Who knows how many more unsolved murders there would be. So, Bittaker and Norris just can't keep this to themselves anymore, and they need to tell someone. But they chose the wrong guy. According to Wicked Attraction, while Bittaker and Norris were in jail together, they also had another friend in jail, a man named Joe Jackson, who, I need to add, was a father to 2 girls, probably not the guy you want to be bragging to about your rapes and murders of young girls, if this guy cares about his daughters at all, I guess. So after their murders, they get in contact with Joe Jackson and confide in him with what they were doing. Now, this doesn't sit well with him. Turns out, he even thought that Bittaker was showing interest in his daughters, who were also teenagers, by the way. After the two tell Jackson this, he doesn't stay quiet. He ends up telling his attorney about what the two have been doing. His attorney then arranges a meeting with a detective at the Hermosa Beach Police Department. When Jackson is talking about what Bittaker and Norris told him, he mentions their silver van, which rings a bell to the investigator. Remember I mentioned that at the end of September, before they killed Shirley Ledford, they made a mistake and tried kidnapping a woman, but she got away?
Yeah.
Well, the detective meets with that woman. She was showed a photographic lineup of multiple men, Norris and Bittaker included. And guess who she immediately points to?
Obviously, Bittaker and Norris.
Yep, she points them out right away. Now, according to Wicked Attraction, police don't know where Bittaker is, but they know where Norris is, and they end up keeping track of him to see what he's up to, and maybe he'll lead them to Bittaker as well. They end up catching Norris breaking the law almost the minute they start keeping tabs on him. He had small scales, which was used to measure drugs, and he was measuring out marijuana and putting it into packages, so he was arrested. Police searched his car and they found many pictures of young women. Police ask him what the photos are about and if he attacked or hurt any of these girls, but he denies ever touching them, only taking photos of them. Bittaker gets wind that the police are looking for him, so he calls Norris. But instead of Norris answering the phone, it's a police officer. The officer pretends that he's one of Norris's friends just to lure Bittaker in. But the trap doesn't work. Bittaker knows it's a setup. He quickly gets rid of any evidence he can from the murders. He buries his audio recordings of the tortures in the Hollywood Hills and then goes to a hotel room. But he ends up being arrested. And at first, he's actually cooperative with the authorities. Investigators question Norris and Bittaker about the missing girls. Remember, there are still four of their victims that are missing, which they dumped in the mountains. The men plead innocent and say they have no idea where these girls would be, but when investigators check out their van, it tells a completely different story. Police end up finding another 500 photos of girls. According to case law, one of the photographs they find is of Andrea Hall, and six other photographs are of Jackie Gilliam. They also end up obtaining the audio recording of Shirley Ledford. They find the small sledgehammer in the van as well. Back at Norris's apartment, they even find a bracelet that belonged to Shirley. And something absolutely horrifying that they find in his apartment as well are seven bottles of different types of acids. Norris said that Bittaker was planning on using these on their next victim.
Thank God it didn't get that far.
Exactly. Deanna, read prosecutor Stephen Kay's quote according to Wicked Attraction.
He says, quote, "You could not get any Hollywood actress to imitate what you hear on that tape. It's just the most awful thing that anyone has ever heard. It's like it reaches down inside you and just pulls your insides out," end quote.
The former LA County Sheriff Peter Pitches says, quote, "These suspects have taken over 500 photographs of potential victims. We don't know which of the 500 may turn out to be actual victims," end quote. Detectives then talk to Norris and confront him with all the information they now have. Norris knows he's in trouble and he hopes that he can make a deal. So he confesses to the murders in hopes of avoiding the death sentence. When he tells them about the murders, he has absolutely no feelings. The women meant absolutely nothing to him. And he claims that Bittaker took the lead in all the murders. When detectives talk to Bittaker, he gives them nothing. He won't even admit to the murders. But based on Norris's confession, along with all the evidence they have, they charge both men with 5 counts of murder, robbery, kidnapping, forcible rape, sex perversion, and criminal conspiracy. Now, detectives need to find the bodies of these girls. As part of Norris's plea deal, he leads a search and recovery team into the San Gabriel Mountains, where their secret spot is, to locate the remains of their victims. They end up recovering the skeletal remains of Jackie Gilliam and Leah Lamp, which were the two girls that were kidnapped together. According to Medium.com, their remains were found scattered along a dry creek bed. and Leah's skull had multiple blunt force trauma fractures, and Jackie's skull still had the ice pick in it. And unfortunately, as hard as they searched for Cindy and Andrea, they never found their bodies. In January of 1981, Bittaker goes on trial in Torrance, California. According to Wicked Attraction, both men are diagnosed with having antisocial personalities. So this is a personality where people treat other human beings as objects. Dr. Ronald Markman says it best, in my opinion. He compares their thinking of humans to an orange. He says, you eat the orange and you throw away the orange peel. So to Bittaker and Norris, these girls were the orange peel. Now, in court, they played a portion of the audio recording from the rape and torture of Shirley Ledford. According to Medium.com, Shirley was crying, screaming, and begging for them to stop, but they both just mocked her and ordered her to scream more. While the recording was being played, many people, including jurors and prosecutors, had to leave the courtroom, and they left in tears, and some even threw up. After the trial, several jurors even needed trauma counseling. And Bittaker actually smiled and looked very calm while the recording was being played.
Disgusting.
Very disgusting. About a month later, in February of 1981, Bittaker was found guilty of all five murders, and a month later, he was sentenced to death. It only took jurors about 15 minutes to decide that he should be executed. Norris ended up pleading guilty and received 45 years to life. Now, Bittaker ended up dying on December 13th of last year, 2019, at the age of 79. He was in the San Quentin prison in California, still on death row when he died. Up until the time of his death, he really showed no remorse, and he even responded to fan mail that he received in prison, and sometimes he would actually sign with the nickname Pliers.
Pliers? That is sick.
Yeah, it's very sick. According to the East Bay Times, when prosecutor Stephen Kay learned of Bittaker's death, which, by the way, was declared of natural causes, he said in an interview, quote, he died a natural death, something that his victims never had a chance for. They had their whole lives ahead of them. They never got to get married, have children, or grandchildren. The last thing they saw on earth were these two monsters, end quote. According to Medium.com, Norris was first eligible for parole in 2009, but he actually didn't appear for his parole hearing. He was then again up for parole in 2019, but he was denied. He ended up dying in prison in February of this year at the age of 72 while in a California medical facility. Now, as I said, so many people in that courtroom were left traumatized by the recording that they listened to of Shirley Ledford. According to Medium.com, the recording of Shirley Ledford's torture is actually being used by the FBI Academy in Quantico, Virginia, and it's being used as a tool to help desensitize agents to the reality of torture and murder. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Homicide Hot Dish.
Thanks for listening.
And be sure to check out our Facebook page for when our next episode will be coming out.